This is your life, episode 81. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Is everything you dreamed it would be when the world was younger and you had everything? Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I'll be talking about how to create more margin in your crazy, busy life. Do you feel stressed, overwhelmed, maybe even burned out? Have you given up hope that things can change? Well, if so, you're not alone. In this episode, I'm going to be sharing some practical strategies and tips, things I've learned the hard way, and I'm continuing to learn, and offer you some hope. Life doesn't have to be this way. Well, you can find the outline, the resource links, and a complete transcript in the show notes at michaelhyatt.com/81, as in episode 81. I'll be back in a minute with some thoughts on this topic.
If you have something to say or sell in today's noisy world,
now you can get the inspiration, training, and tools you need to increase your influence and impact.
Platform University, a community of like-minded individuals led by one of Forbes magazine's top 50 social media influencers, Michael Hyatt.
Each month, you'll get access to
The Masterclass, where Michael interviews leading platform authorities.
Backstage Pass, a behind-the-scenes look at Michael's own platform business.
Member Makeover, with specific recommendations you can put to work now.
A live Q&A session where you can ask Michael your most burning questions.
And the discussion forum where our members support one another in their common quest.
Hi, this is Phil Gerbyshack from theshutupshow.com. My favorite part of Platform University are definitely the discussion forums. They answer questions I didn't even know I had before I can even think of them.
Intrigued? Now it is the time to invest in building your own platform. PlatformUniversity.com.
I don't know how you're feeling this time of the year, but I've come through a crazy busy season myself. Since Thanksgiving, I've had three surgeries, two of my eyes and a hernia surgery. None of them really major, but still they took their toll on me. I launched my new course, 5 Days to Your Best Year Ever. It was a much bigger launch than we anticipated. It did about three times the volume that we anticipated. I did a new photo shoot. I attended and spoke at the New Media Expo in Las Vegas. I attended Tony Robbins Business Mastery Course, which was crazy. 12 to 15 hours a day for 5 days. Tony really believes in immersive learning. And man, were we immersed. And then planning for a video shoot that we're going to do next week. So it just seems like that coupled with the holidays, you know, just hasn't let up. I haven't had hardly any time to breathe. And my guess is that you may be finding yourself in the very same boat. Well, last night I was having this feeling and I started visiting with my daughter, Megan. We started talking about it. She was feeling the same way. And so I spent today really revisiting the subject of margin. And let me define first what that means. And I'm taking this from a book by Richard Swenson, MD, and he wrote a terrific book called Margin, Restoring Emotional, Physical, Financial, and Time Reserves to Overloaded Lives. Sounds good, doesn't it? Well, it's definitely well worth the read. Here's what Dr. Swenson says, quote, "Margin is the space between our load and our limits. It's the amount allowed beyond that which is needed. It's something held in reserve for contingencies or unanticipated situations. Margin is the gap between rest and exhaustion, the space between breathing freely and suffocating. Margin is the opposite of overload. If we're overloaded, we have no margin. Most people are not quite sure when they pass from margin to overload. Threshold points are not easily measurable and are also different for different people in different circumstances. We don't want to be underachievers, heaven forbid, so we fill our schedules uncritically. Options are as attractive as they are numerous, and we overbook. If we were equipped with a flashing light to indicate 100% full, we would better gauge our capacities. But we don't have such an indicator light, and we don't know when we have overextended ourselves until we feel the pain. And as a result, many people commit to 120% of life and wonder why the burden feels so heavy. It's rare to see a life pre-scheduled to only 80%, leaving a margin for responding to the unexpected that God sends our way. Man, does that sound good? Does that sound like what you need? It sure does for me. Sign me up. I want more of that. Well, in this episode, I want to talk about margin. And if you'll forgive me, I'm just going to preach to myself. This is stuff that I know and stuff that I've continually had to relearn because it seems like I get it honed. I get kind of in the groove. I've got my margin back. And then almost like the law of entropy, little by little, things become more and more disorganized and overbooked until I'm overburdened and then I have to do it all over again. So I'm in that period again, and I thought that if I would just preach it myself, it might be helpful to you as well. So feel free to listen in. Before we can create more margin, we have to understand where it's coming from. You know, sometimes it's cutbacks at work. I mean, ever since the economic, the recession of 2008, you know, we've been in this downward kind of economic situation where more and more employers are cutting back, trying to get by with less, and putting more and more demands on their existing employees. And so if you didn't get laid off and you still have a job, I'm sure you're thankful, but it's probably tougher than it's ever been. So that's one source for the evaporation of margin, if you will. Another source, just competition in the market. I mean, just to keep up, to really offer a competitive advantage in a world now where our competition is global, you know, is really, really challenging. And so people find themselves working longer hours, working harder to make a distinction and to differentiate themselves from their competitors. And all that takes a toll, leaving very little margin to deal with the rest of life. Or how about this? Online technologies and gadgets. Now, I'm a gadget guy. I love technology. And I love exploring apps. But honestly, do these save us time? I don't think so. You know, maybe they've made us more efficient, occasionally even more effective, but they're also often a giant time suck. And we find ourselves, you know, in this pursuit endlessly for the perfect app or the perfect system or the perfect process. Well, all these external items are a factor. I know they are in my life. They probably are in your life. All these external factors pull at us. They eat away our margin. They chip away with it till we don't have any. But I want to suggest in this episode that we look a little bit deeper. I think really most of this problem with margin comes from fear. You know, the fear that we're going to miss out on an opportunity. You know, that if we say no to this opportunity, it might not come back again. This last year, for example, I had an enormously productive year, best year I've ever had in my entire career. We tripled sales over the previous year, which was not bad as a new business, and it was all great. And I celebrated for about a nanosecond till I realized, oh my gosh, maybe that was a fluke. Maybe I can't do it again this year. What if I don't get the same opportunities this year that I got last year? And I felt myself just kind of in that place of scarcity and fear where I felt like I couldn't afford to say no to opportunities. Crazy. Or maybe it's a fear of disappointing others. I'm basically a people pleaser, and I hate to say no to people. I hate to hear them sigh. I hate them to go away empty-handed. And it's really, really difficult for me to say no to people. But a fear of disappointing others drives a lot of this erosion of our margin. Or how about this? A fear of being left out. You know, that we get invited to that party, we get invited to that baby shower, we get invited to that social or that mixer, and we think, gosh, I don't want to be left out. I mean, something may happen there. There may be networking opportunities. There may be the opportunity to really do something significant. I mean, even at the New Media Expo, I was invited to a couple of events while I was there, and I was already, you know, I left and went there with virtually no margin, and that just sounded horrible to me. You know, I mean, I love to network with people, and I am a people person, but I just thought, I just don't have the emotional resources to do that right now. And yet there was this nagging thing in my spirit. Well, what about if I'm missing an opportunity? You know, what am I going to miss by not participating? And then there's also, I think, the fear of being judged. You know, there's this expectation that society puts on us, or maybe it's our church, or maybe it's our friends. And, You know, we think that if we say no, that we're going to be judged and we're going to be deemed unworthy and unfit and irresponsible for not accepting the invitation or whatever it may happen to be. Well, margin is not something that just happens in your life. My experience has been you've got to fight for it, and it takes some intentionality and it takes some strategy. In this episode, I want to share 6 ways to reclaim your lost margin and restore sanity to your life. And I just went through this drill today, so I'm fresh on the experience, and I hope that you're going to find this helpful. First way to reclaim your lost margin is to recognize that your current load is unsustainable. You know, breakthroughs rarely happen without a breakdown. And you can either play the victim and just sort of drift along, acting like you don't have any agency or control of the matter, and wait for this to happen to you, or you have a breakdown, or you have a burnout. Or you can be proactive and declare it. And trust me, it's a lot easier to do the latter. And that's exactly where I got to last night, was just saying, look, this is crazy. My workload is unsustainable. I've got to pare it back. I've got to make some decisions about the commitments I'm going to make going forward, the way that I'm going to allocate my time, and the way that I'm going to live out my priorities. So way number one, recognize your current load is unsustainable. Have you gotten to that point yet? Are you willing to declare a breakdown and just say, this is not working? I got to do something else. I mean, it's the definition of insanity, right? You know, keep doing the same thing, expecting a different result. Well, probably it's not going to get better unless you're proactive and unless you first recognize that it's unsustainable. Second way that you can reclaim your lost margin, acknowledge, and this is a tough one, and I had to come to this conclusion last night, acknowledge that the real problem is you. The problem's not out there. The problem's in here. And it's worth taking inventory of the external causes, like I tried to do a few minutes ago. They're a factor, but they're not the cause. You are the cause. I'm the cause of my overcommitment. The reason I feel overwhelmed, the reason I'm on the verge of burnout, I can't blame anybody else. I'm the one saying yes. Nobody's holding a gun to my head. You know, nobody's forcing me to do these things. I'm the one saying yes. And I do think it comes out of these fears that I talked about. And I know it's difficult to take responsibility on this, but honestly, it is so liberating. Why? Because if you're the cause, the problem is suddenly not outside of your control. You can change the way you respond to requests, to invitations, to the demands that come across your desk. If it's your fault, you can respond differently. You can change your response. And that's one of the things that I love about being human, is that we have the ability, as Dr. Covey said in the 7 Habits of Highly Successful People, we have the ability to put a pause between the stimulus and the response. And we can choose a different response if we want to. So that's the second way. Third way to reclaim your lost margin, develop an abundance mindset. You know, this is the antidote to scarcity. And this does more to combat fear than any other single thing I could recommend. It's the key, really. Different strategies and tools are not going to help you if your mindset doesn't change. If you're still stuck, struggling with fear, it doesn't really matter what strategies you have. You're still going to use them to a bad consequence. And I did, by the way, an entire podcast on this. It's episode 64. There's a link in the show notes, but it's called Two Kinds of Thinkers, Which Are You? And it has to do with abundance and scarcity thinking and what some of the markers are those. But what kind of thinker are you? Do you have an abundance mindset? You know, abundance is not something you achieve. And I think some of us think that sometimes. It's something that if we really work hard, if we really, you know, stay focused, if we're really intense, then eventually we'll experience abundance. Abundance is something you recognize. And here's my operating assumption. I currently have everything I need to be what God wants me to be and to do what He's given me to do. And really, the antidote to scarcity thinking and to fear is gratitude. To just stop and to begin to itemize, to begin to list the things in your life that you're thankful for. I do this actually as part of my journaling exercise every morning. What am I thankful for right now? And it's things like my health, and my wife and my family and the fact that I have gainful employment. And I just try to itemize as many things as I can because I want to operate from a spirit or a mindset of abundance, because I know that that's the best antidote to fear. It's also a great antidote to anger and almost every other negative emotion, but we don't practice gratitude enough. And we've got to get back to that if we're going to reclaim margin. We don't want to be in that position where, because we're fearful, we say yes to things we should be saying no to, and we crowd out the margin in our lives. So that's the third way. Now, the fourth way, and I'm going to start getting really practical here with some strategies. The fourth way to reclaim your lost margin is to create your ideal week. This is what I spent the day doing, and it was hugely helpful to get back to the basics. Like I said, margin is not something that just happens. You have to fight for it. And everyone, it seems, wants a piece of you, and no one seems to appreciate the fact, maybe not even you, that you're a finite resource. You are. There's only 24 hours in a day, and you got to sleep some of that, and you got to take care of some of your personal needs during that. And that is not an elastic resource. It's finite. That's why creating or revisiting, if you've done this before, your ideal week is so important. And by the way, I was first introduced to this concept by the author Todd Duncan in a series of audio recordings he made in the late 90s that eventually became the book Time Traps, Proven Strategies for Swamped Salespeople. And the idea is this: it's similar to a financial budget. The only difference is that you plan how you'll spend your time rather than your money. And like a financial budget, you spend it on paper first. My ideal week, the week I would live if I could control 100% of what happens, and I know that's not possible, but I want to get the ideal so that at least I have a template to work from. But my ideal week, the week I would live if I could control 100% of what happens, is divided into a simple grid. Now, I'm going to do my best to describe this, but you might want to pause the podcast and download my Excel template so you can follow along. And you can find that Excel template at michaelhyatt.com/myidealweek. It's free. You can just download it. You can see what I've done and use it, adapt it, do whatever you want. But if you don't have Excel and just want to see a PDF, you can download that at michaelhyatt.com/myidealweek PDF. So here's how it works. Each day for me during the week has a theme. In addition, each day is segmented according to a specific focus area. Now let me describe those. My themes are listed on the very top row. Imagine again this grid. The columns in this spreadsheet are my days. The rows are the hours of the day. So the themes are listed on the very top row. So for example, Monday and Tuesday are devoted to my blog and my podcast. That's the foundation of everything else I do. That's the engine that drives my business. Then Wednesday and Thursday, for me, are devoted to special projects. And this will vary from season to season. For example, for the next several weeks, I'm preparing for the launch of my new WordPress theme, the Get Noticed theme. And when I get ready to write my next book, I'll focus on writing. That'll be my Wednesday and Thursday activities. And if I have a speaking engagement, it has to come out of this allotted time, my preparation, even speaking. I try not to allow exceptions to that. Friday is my day for appointments, and I do my best to batch these on this one day a week. And it's really difficult for me to write when I have meetings on the same day. So I try to batch those together so I minimize the interruptions and stay as productive as I can during my writing and during my creating. Saturday for me is for personal chores and recreation, and Sunday is for worship, rest, and for planning the next week. So again, each day, each column on this spreadsheet represents a day, and each day has its own theme, and a couple days have the same theme. The focus areas, now we're looking at the rows in the spreadsheet. We're looking from left to right. My focus areas are listed in the leftmost column. So, for example, the early morning hours for me are devoted to self, praying, reading, journaling, working out. I usually listen to audiobooks or podcasts while I'm running, but that's really my time to again, quote Dr. Covey, to sharpen the saw, you know, to really make sure that I'm becoming the best version of myself that I can, that I'm taking care of my spirit and my soul, and that I'm developing as a person. Then the middle of the day is devoted to work. I start at 8 a.m. I finish usually promptly at 6 p.m. If I don't, by the way, Parkinson's law will become operative. You know what that is? That's the law that says work expands to the time allotted for it. And I found that to be true in my life. If I don't have an end time, then it just can expand and take all day and all evening. The end of the day is reserved for my family, friends, reading, and on Sundays, planning. And currently, we only have one daughter at home, and she's very busy with her work. So Gail and I can eat dinner together like we did tonight, taking time to connect, catch up, check in, see how one another are doing. So on this chart, you'll notice that activities that contribute to my goals and priorities are colored green. I sometimes refer to this as on time. It's time where I'm on purpose, on task, on my goals, working on the things that move the ball down the field. And these are really the important tasks, not the urgent, but they're the important ones. Those that are not related to my goals, but still have to be done, are shaded red. And those that are gray are simply not scheduled, and this represents margin. So some of the red stuff has to be done, but over the years, I've tried to eliminate as much of that as possible and really focus on the things that are important, but not necessarily urgent. Because for most of us, it's easy to get sucked up in the urgent and never really get to the important. And one of the best ways to make the important things happen is to schedule them or put them on your calendar. Now, this scheme is admittedly subjective, but it's helpful to me to make sure I'm working on what matters most. Now, if this sounds like it might be helpful to you, here's what I would suggest. Number one, create a template. You can either download my Ideal Week template or you can start from scratch. It's up to you. But the idea is that you want to get firmly in mind what it is that you want. If you could control 100% of your day and your week, what would it look like? Do you even know? Or are you just drifting along, caught up in everybody else's demands? And the truth is, if you don't have a plan, somebody else has a plan for your life. So create a template. Number two, I would suggest you identify your themes and take advantage of batching. This won't be possible in every situation, but it is helpful if you can assign a theme for each day and then batch similar activities together. Number three, schedule the important activities. These are the ones you'll shade green and they contribute to your goals and priorities, but you've got to allocate time for these first. The best way to make progress against your most important priorities is let them find their way to your calendar. Make sure that they get scheduled. Number four, then once you have the most important things, you put the big rocks in first, so to speak, then fill in around the edges. Now schedule the less important activities. These are the ones that you're going to shade red. They have to be done, but they don't really move you towards your goals, and that's okay. You can't eliminate it, but you at least want to sort of put some boundaries around it and make sure that your entire calendar, your entire ideal week is not made up of urgent things that don't really help you accomplish what matters most. It may be important to somebody else, but it's not important to you in terms of what you're trying to accomplish. And then I would say number five, tweak and fine tune. I usually go through several iterations. I went through four iterations of it today as I was moving meetings around, as I was trying to balance it out with my team and all of us to come up with something that worked for everyone. So that's the fourth way to create more margin. Create your ideal week. So let's go to number five. This is the fifth way to reclaim the lost margin and get back to a reasonable plan. And that is enroll the people around you. Now, it's really easy if you've done the ideal week because you can share it with the people that work with you so that they don't inadvertently sabotage your plans. You know, if they don't know that Friday, for example, or Thursday and Friday or whatever it is for you is the only day that you take meetings, it's very easy for them to schedule that on Monday or Tuesday. And then you resent it and you wonder why they're at odds with you and why are they fighting you? Well, it might be as simple as you never shared the vision with them. You didn't get alignment and they think they're doing what they're supposed to do, but you haven't given them an alternative. So enroll the people around you. And one of the things I did today, I talked to my assistant, Trevinia, and I said, look, here's reality. And we both know this and let's just admit it. I'm not very good at saying no. You know, I hate disappointing people. I'll often say yes when I should say no, and then I'll resent it later. Or I'll put myself in a situation where I'm having to work during the weekend in order to meet the commitments that I've made to other people. And every time I do that, I'm stealing time from my family or I'm stealing time from my health. And I said, Trevinia, you've got to help me. I'm going to funnel every request I can to you. And I just need you to be tougher than I would be. Not because we're trying to be mean, not because we don't want to help. We do. But I help the most people when I'm blogging, when I'm podcasting, when I'm speaking, when I'm doing this in a structured way and not these ad hoc one-off meetings, which just are really, really tough and don't help that many people. Then number six, the sixth way to reclaim the lost margin is to put all this into practice. You know, get started. Start scheduling your time according to your ideal week. And what I did today was when I got my ideal week done, I printed out a PDF of it, and then I sent it to everybody on my team. And I said, look, guys, this is what I'm trying to accomplish. I want you to know what my schedule is. I know that's not what it looks like if you look at my calendar now, because it's kind of a mess, because I've let it get that way. I take full responsibility for that. It's nobody else's fault. It's my fault. But it's not sustainable, and something's got to change. And I want us to work towards getting back on this ideal week. Now, when Trevinia saw that, she said, you know, it's going to take you a couple of months to get back to this because you've made all these commitments and we're kind of stacked up. I mean, it's like at an airport where we've got more planes that need to land than we've got runway, and that's kind of where you're at right now. So it's going to take us several weeks to get through it. And I said, I understand. What I want you to do is not begin with the near term, but the long term. I want you to go out to where my calendar is clear, and then I want you to start blocking off this time for the rest of the year or for the next 12 months. Because if we do that, then we're less likely to book that time or double book that time as we roll into that unplanned and uncharted territory. And then I said, I want you to come back to the near term and we'll just do the best we can. You know, we don't have to beat ourselves up about it. It's probably going to take several weeks. It might take you several months to clear out the meetings and commitments that don't fit your template. No problem. Be patient. But if your people are aware of this, they can really help you and help you put it into practice. But don't be legalistic. The calendar was made for man, not man for the calendar. Look, if you and I are going to be effective over the long term, then we have to create margin in our lives. This is not optional. It's not a luxury. It's something we have to have in order to take care of ourselves and be healthy, have healthy marriages, have healthy relationships with our children, have healthy companies and businesses and ministries and organizations. We've got to get that margin back in our lives and pace ourselves for the long term. And here's a question for you. Do you feel like you're out of margin? And if so, what are you going to do about it? Well, leave your answer at michaelhyatt.com/81, as in episode 81. I'd love to hear from you. I think we could have a robust discussion around this, and I think we could help each other as we fight to get this margin back and really make it a key part of our life.
Thinking of starting your own blog, but worried that your technical know-how is not up to scratch?
The good news is that starting blogging has never been easier.
Michael shares his knowledge with you for free and will show you that 20 minutes is all it takes to have your own blog up and running.
This is John D. Harrison from johndharrison.com. I started out with a free WordPress site, and if I would have applied your advice, started out with a self-hosted site, I really could have saved myself a lot of headaches. Self-hosted definitely is the way to go, and your screencast is the easiest way I know to make that happen.
Join Michael and follow his quick and easy step-by-step video tutorial at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup.
Take action now and start blogging today.
michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup.
So let's turn now to our listener Q&A segment. We had a bunch of questions this week, none of them about margin, but about some other topics, and I thought I would address a few here. The first one comes from Carl.
Hi, Michael. My name is Carl Rosenblum. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia, and I blog at carlrosenblum.com. My question concerns organization of electronic documents. I have a good method for paper documents using David Allen's Getting Things Done methodology, but I really don't have a system for electronic documents, and I was curious what you use. Thanks. I love the blog and podcast.
Carl, I use Evernote for my electronic filing system. Everything, and I mean everything, goes into Evernote. It's my digital brain. So if I get a letter, or today I got a tax notice from the state, you know, I scan that into my Evernote scanner, by the way, which is a very cool, although expensive device, but it's very fast. It interfaces directly with Evernote. And so I just scan it in there. It creates a note, and then I tag it. Now, here's something that's kind of interesting in terms of how I organize Evernote, because you might be tempted, and I did this at first myself, is create a ton of notebooks. And so I put all these different documents in different notebooks. So in this particular case, like this tax document that came, I had a notebook for taxes. But the problem is this. The problem is it's not very flexible, because a document or a note can only go in one notebook. What I learned was the power of tagging. If instead I tag it with taxes, then I can have those documents that don't really fit neatly into one notebook. They would probably go into several notebooks if I could. But instead, what I do is just tag them with multiple tags. And then if I search for that tag, it comes up regardless of the tag that I search for. It takes a little discipline to get up to speed on this, but Evernote's very easy to use. It's available on every single device, whether it's your iPhone, your Android device, your Windows machine, your Mac machine, your iPad, whatever. Evernote's available on all those formats. And they keep improving it like crazy. But I love it. I live in Evernote. It's one of my most fundamental productivity apps. And it really does enable me to file things electronically. Great question. The next question comes from Mark.
Hello, Michael. My name is Mark DeJesus, and I blog at my website, which is called Transformed You, which can be found at markdejesus.com. I also blog at my church's website that I pastor, which is called turninghearts ministries.org. I have two questions. The first one is, I'll find that when I'm blogging, I'll have a topic where I can flesh out the topic in many multiple parts. So I'll have a certain subject, and as I'm writing, I'm going, oh man, I could split this off into another part, another part, another part. I can end up with 8 to 10 parts of the same subject, all great articles that I feel would be useful. But I'm wondering if that's the best way to present them. Subject, part one, subject, part two. Is that a little bit redundant? Should I find a different way to present that? Is that not the best way to do that when it comes to blogging? Also, another question I have is, because I write on two different sites and contribute to two blog sites, is it okay to post an article on both sites? In other words, an identical article on both websites. Sometimes I feel like something I'm writing on would be great for both streams. I typically will put it on one site alone, but I found, should I maybe put it on the other site because it could benefit both crowds that I'm communicating to? Thank you so much. You are doing tremendous things to equip people and give people the tools and really the confidence to be able to get their message out. So thanks a lot. Take care.
Yeah, good question. I struggle with this from time to time myself because sometimes you feel like you've got more content than you can deliver in a single post or maybe even in a podcast episode. For me, when it starts getting longer than about 1,200 words as a post, that's when I consider breaking it up into more than one post. Here's the problem, though. And by the way, this is more art than science. I don't have a formula that you can use, Mark, to try to figure this out. You're just going to have to experiment. But I can tell you this, that typically when you do a series, you get less response to each subsequent one. So, for example, Gail and I did, you know, several episodes back, Help, I'm Married to an Entrepreneur. That was a lot of fun to do for the two of us, and that was a three-part series. We did it from her perspective, we did it from my perspective, and then we just answered questions. Well, I can tell you based on the stats, the participation or the downloads went down with each subsequent episode because people feel like, oh my gosh, you know, I missed that first one, so I'm just, you know, going to let this one go too. And they don't jump in. And I can tell you from being in the book publishing world, when we used to do series, the same thing would happen. We'd sell the most books for the first volume in the series, and then it would go down steadily after that. The second volume got the second number of sales, third volume, third number of sales, and so forth. Very predictable. So I would be cautious, and I am cautious about using series these days. I prefer not to do it. I'd rather have each article and each podcast be a freestanding episode or article in its own. But occasionally that doesn't work. I reserve that kind of thing, though. When it becomes more than that, it's best delivered in a different context, I think, like a course or like a book or like, you know, any kind of longer form delivery mechanism. The last question comes from Steve.
Hi, Michael. This is Steve Stewart from MoneyPlanSOS.com. I was listening to your interview on Pat Flynn's Smart Passive Income, and you guys were talking about, I think it was pushing through hard times, and you were reciting a quote from John Maxwell that was something in the way of, you know, quitting is the only way to fail. But then I was thinking about the definition of insanity, which is, you know, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. So where's the line between the two? Because I want to believe that fighting the good fight and fighting your way through the hard times and trying to do different things to make my business work is going to be the way to success, while all my competition falls to the wayside. But then again, I have to think, you know, how long is too long? When is it time to quit? When am I in the cul-de-sac, as Seth Godin says in The Dip? How do you identify between the two? Is there a time frame? Is there a set goal that you have to put in place on a certain date? How do you identify when it's time to quit or when you just keep fighting through because you know you're going to win someday? I would love to hear your thoughts on it. It's been on my mind for a while, and I'd appreciate it. Again, this is Steve from MoneyPlanSOS.com. Thanks for all you do.
Steve, I wished I had an answer to this question. I get asked this a lot. And I've already used my it's art, not science line, so I'm not sure I can use it again. But I don't know. I think you've just got to use your judgment. One of the things I pay particular attention to is my own passion. And there are times when I fail, but I'm still passionate about accomplishing whatever it was I set out to do. Sometimes, though, my passion wanes. And it might have been a temporary thing, but it wasn't enduring. It wasn't lasting. And I use that as a barometer about whether to continue. Now, passion is, like, for me, the key thing. You know, competence is important. You know, having a demand in the marketplace for whatever it is I'm trying to create is important. I've talked about that before. But passion is the most foundational one. I don't care if I'm competent. I don't care if there is a market for it. If I'm not passionate, I'm probably not going to persevere through, you know, the messy middle and through everything else you encounter in the process of trying to make something successful. So I would just listen to your own heart. I don't know what else to tell you. I would just listen to your own heart and ask, am I really meant? Am I really called to do this thing that I'm attempting to do? And if so, persevere. I will say this, by and large, a little perseverance helps. You know, there are many things that I am so grateful that I didn't bail out at the first sign of the resistance. The first time I encountered some resistance and wanted to quit. I'm glad I hung in there, persevered, and stayed with it. And I think you will be too. So I would just go a little bit further than you think you're capable of and hang in there. Perseverance is an uncelebrated virtue in our culture. You know, we tend to be sort of microwave kind of people. We want instant gratification. We want to see the results now, not later. But that's not how most things in life work. It makes for great sales copy. It makes for great advertisements. But for the most part, that's not how life works. Well, that's all the time we have for questions this week. I'll be back after the break with the tip of the week.
The idea of writing and publishing the book can be very overwhelming.
It is hard to know where to start and what is the right thing to do.
The good news is that trusted and reliable help is available for you. Get Published from Michael Hyatt will give you instant access to Michael's 3 decades of knowledge as a publisher, literary agent, and author. This 21-part audio series will tell you how to publish your work and become successful and thriving author. Michael is confident that Get Published will help your message get noticed in a noisy world. So take action now
and give yourself the very best chance to become a best-selling author.
MichaelHyatt.com/get published.
Now let me leave you with one final tip. I spent a few days recently really getting up to speed on Expensify. I don't know if you've ever used it, but it's a very cool little app for keeping up with your expenses. And I mean, there are fewer things in life that I hate more than keeping up with expense reports, but Expensify almost, I'm not going to say it makes it fun, but it almost makes it fun. I have it on my iPhone, but I also use the web version, but it's very powerful. It makes keeping up with expenses a breeze. For example, you could take a photo of an expense. You can even smart scan it so it pulls off the data into the right categories. Regardless, you can tag it with the appropriate category, make a comment or two, and then add it to an expense report, and it's all there. It even interfaces, I didn't know this till this weekend, but it even interfaces with QuickBooks, so your accountant or your bookkeeper doesn't have to rekey the data. It's all there. I also found a great Expensify video training series at Gravo. I think that's how you pronounce it. I don't have any relationship to them, but it was a very well done video series on Expensify, and it explains all the basic concepts and showed me some things that I was completely unaware of, like the QuickBooks integration. But it also has, interestingly, Evernote integration, which is really cool as well. But I've linked to that video series in the show notes, so check it out. Well, that's about it for this episode of This Is Your Life. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please show the love by going to michaelhyatt.com/love and tweeting a link out to the show. I'd be so grateful if you do that. That does help us get the word out. And thanks also to Natus.81, Shirley Showalter, Laura Handler, John Stolpe, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, and my Lady J for rating my podcast on iTunes this past week. If you'd like to do that, you can go to michaelhyatt.com/iTunes and leave a review. That, again, is something that really helps keep the visibility of the show up so that people who are looking for something similar can discover it on their own. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your
I'm